Hello and welcome to The Tips, a brand new weekly podcast from the DP World Tour. Each week, we will focus on the runners and riders from the main tours on both sides of the pond. And with the help of some expert guests, we will be diving into the facts and figures to provide some insight into where the value may lie. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Well, let's meet this week's tipsters. First up, we have Ben Coley, who's a golf writer for sportinglife.com, and he's being joined by Matt Cooper, freelance golf journalist with plenty of betting preview experience. And also, we've got Kit Alexander, our man inside the ropes, presenter and commentator on the DP World Tour, here to provide some deeper insight into the players and, of course, the courses we will focus on this week. And Kit, I'm going to start with you. Have you found the start of the season? Some surprise wins, some big name wins, obviously the designated events on the PGA Tour, loads of excitement, and we've just had a Masters win for John Rahm European behind us. What have you been your highlights so far?
I think it's been a great start to the year. It's been exciting. That's a big thing for me. The designated events on the PGA Tour have delivered big rivalries, big finishes, and on the DP World Tour, we're guaranteed drama. It's what I love about it. There's always a storyline. You look at the Sunday finishes we've had, it's never really a foregone conclusion. You can never sit back and relax. It's always to-ing and fro-ing. I mean, one of my favourites this year was Dan Gavin's in Ras Al Khaimah in one of the most insane final holes I've ever seen. A double bogey to win it, visiting the water twice, then thinking he's thrown it away and holding a 25-footer to actually seal the deal. Incredible. We've got one major in the bank, the Masters, John Rahm. So good he could give everyone a two-shot head start with a four-putt on the first green. And, you know, looking ahead to the Ryder Cup, obviously that's on our minds a little bit this week with the DS Automobiles Italian Open being at Marco Simone. I really like the way the European team's shaping up, but an exciting start to the year and loads more to come.
Absolutely. It has been an exciting start to the year, and none more so than for our experts, our tipsters. So take us back, Ben. Nick Backham was your man to bring you in, and he went and delivered it. Is that the highlight of the season so far?
Yeah, I guess it would have to be that and Victor Perez. I don't want to steal Matt's thunder there in Abu Dhabi. I think that was a really popular one, not just for us, but the sort of golf betting community, if you like. But Backham was straightforward. I mean, the way he won that tournament on Sunday, a bit like Matt Baldwin the week before, you know, these are players who hadn't won before. And as Kit says, we get these stories pretty much every week on the DP World Tour. And in both instances, to go out and look like it was what they've been preparing for their whole careers, and there was no real problem in going out and completing it, was fantastic. And Backham's a really promising player. I mean, this year's Ryder Cup, probably too soon, but don't be surprised if he's one of a number of young Germans coming through and making an impact on that side in years to come. And as Kit said, it's a massive week here. It really feels like the Ryder Cup has been bubbling away in the background, but now it comes to the foreground, because whoever does win this tournament, providing they are European, I think immediately they're on the radar with Nicolai Højgaard and Bob McIntyre as people who've won at Marco Simone. That has to be a feather in your cap, doesn't it? So, yeah, really looking forward to moving into Europe now and seeing how things unfold.
Absolutely. Europe side is very exciting. Also, Quail Hollow, we've got the Wells Fargo. And Matt, you're the man in form. We mentioned we've got Victor Perez at the start of the season in Abu Dhabi, and also Lucas Herbert, some nice odds in Japan just recently.
Yeah, he was a lovely one. But going back to Victor Perez, we're talking about the drama that Daniel Gavin's experienced and other folks. Victor Perez had a fantastic chip in from the bunker, which Ben will have enjoyed just as much as I did. And it's also interesting to remember that the week before the Abu Dhabi Championship, they played the Hero Cup. And I thought that was a fascinating insight into the way that Luke Donald and his vice-captain Eduardo Molinari are putting together the team this year.
OK, well, I think it's time to get into this week's action. That's right, we've got the DS Automobiles Italian Open, of course hosted, as mentioned, at the 2023 Ryder Cup venue, Marco Simone Golf Club in Rome. And what an opportunity this is for Luke Donald to get a really good look at the players who will be challenging for a spot on his team come September. This event was played there historically, but move forward to May, and we've got a stellar field. We've got defending champion Bob McIntyre in there, who just got over Matt Fitzpatrick last time, and it is a phenomenal field. So we need to find out about the course first. Matt, first, let's go to you. What sort of stats should we be looking at before we hear your picks? What did you put focus on for the Marco Simone course this week?
I had a couple of threads of thinking. The first is that I appreciate what Kit says about it. It's a course that will test all of the game, but I think you've got to be pretty strong off the tee. I think if you actually look at the stats of the people who finished top four there, they all feature in strokes gained off the tee, whether that's on the PGA Tour or over here on the European Tour. I'm thinking of guys like Nicolai Højgaard and Robert McIntyre who've won, but also Adrian Meronk and Victor Perez who've gone close, Matt Fitzpatrick and Rory McIlroy. And I think actually all of those guys also have something in common, which is that they've done very well at the Earth course for the DP World Tour Championship. It's a little bit bleeding obvious with Rory McIlroy and Matt Fitzpatrick. They're very good players, so it's kind of obvious that they're going to go into a field that the Italian Open has been in the last couple of years and perform well. But they're actually two-time winners at the Earth course, so that's a solid backup. And then you've got people like Perez and Meronk who've gone and played that very limited number of times, and they've got good finishes there. But that Earth course is a course that favours strong drivers of the ball, so it kind of makes sense to me that's a line of thought to be going with. And also, I think there's like you've got to think about this with the fact that the Ryder Cup is on the horizon. The last two courses that have hosted a European Tour event ahead of a Ryder Cup is Le Golf in 2018, and it was won by Alex Norén, who went on to have quite a big role in the Ryder Cup that year. And then if you go back to 2010, Celtic Manor hosted ahead of the Ryder Cup there. Gray McDowell won that week and he held the vital putt. And Luke Donald and Eduardo Molinari, the captaincy team this year, they finished in the top five and it helped earn them a captain's pick. So if the players are looking back to those two results, they know there's possibilities to do well this week. But the really important thing about that is there's a very fine line between motivation and distraction. So it's very, very difficult for us to, you know, ascertain who's going to just be daydreaming about the possibilities and who's actually going to use that as a prize that they can actually work towards.
Yeah, well said. And how, and you say, I think it is quite crucial that these players are getting experience on the course. We saw in, I think, as you say, 2018, and Alex Norén had a great time. I think it was the long putt against Bryson on the last, didn't he, that he holed out. And also Justin Thomas was the only American who seemed to come over for the French Open and was the only one who put together a good showing. Ben, how important do you think it is to get that experience at Marco Simone? And tell us a bit about the course itself and what the learnings will be. And do you think it will play similar to what we'll see in September as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I read Matt's piece yesterday and he makes the point that, you know, perhaps these days it's considered less important to go on that scouting mission. And, you know, had Rory McIlroy not come here in September, would I think that's a problem come this September? Not really. I think for me it's more, and this comes back to the fact that we are opposite a very strong PGA Tour event this week. Some people would say that's not ideal, but I actually think it adds to the intrigue because it, you know, if Rory had come here and won by four with Matt Fitzpatrick in second and Tyrrell Hatton in third, then we wouldn't really learn anything about the other players who we don't know are capable or are going to step up and make that team. So I think it makes for a really fascinating event, more so than had all the big names turned up. As I said, I think in the case of two very specific players, those that have won at the course already, I think victory would earn them a spot on the team. I think for the others, it's probably more complicated than that because there is still a long time to go. And, you know, we know that the European team will be heavily data influenced. Certainly that's a role we expect Dodo Molinari to play. And I don't think they will be giddy about course wins. I think, you know, if someone like Adrian Meronk were to win this week, but then he struggles to make an impact throughout summer, I think the European captaincy team will be clear-eyed about that. That being said, it's just a perfect launch pad, isn't it? And as far as what we're looking for, I tend to agree that, you know, the first time they came here, it was really was just bombs away. But the course, as it matures, I think we may see a little bit more nuance. And certainly I remember Aaron Rye, for example, being in the mix last year. So I don't think you necessarily got to hit it a mile, although I do think it is a huge advantage. I just think you've got to drive it really well. So in Rye's case, he just had to keep hitting fairways. He had no other way of keeping up with the longer hitters. So if we do see one of the shorter hitters in the mix this week, that will be the formula. They'll be in the fairway all week. And even from there, it is a bit of an uphill battle.
Yeah. As you mentioned, with the not all of the huge names coming over, it is amazing. You look at the market there, the top 10 favourites, there's 8 different European nationalities in there. So lots for Luke Donald to sort of take in. Kit, how much do you think he will be sort of basing any selection or anything ahead of September on this week?
I think what Matt and Ben have said is spot on, that it will inform and it will help. But unless you are a Nicolai Højgaard or a Bob McIntyre and you win this week and it makes it 2 wins at this course, I don't think one win anywhere near guarantees you a spot on that team. Yeah, Eduardo Molinari will know the stats. They will know exactly the profile of player that will suit this golf course when it comes to making their picks, and the type of profile of player they want to complement what's actually already in the team as well. Because it's not just about picking 12 individual players. You're thinking about partnerships. We saw a little bit at the Hero Cup with some of the pairings that they chucked together, what's kind of in their mind. You saw a Perez-Miliozzi partnership there, which sort of had mixed success. But, you know, you've got to think about who's playing with who and in what format, foursomes, four ball. And then, of course, have your best players. Form is huge. Form is absolutely huge. You look back on Ryder Cups, and players play well in Ryder Cups, generally speaking, when they're playing well going into Ryder Cups. You don't turn up there on a Monday and find form if you're playing badly. It just doesn't happen. So whilst match play is a different beast and Ryder Cup experience and course form are all great, you want 12 guys who are playing good golf at the time when they get there.
We've gone around it too much. We need to get into some tips now. How it's going to work, we're going to get a couple of tips from both Matt and Ben. And then I think we'll have a bit of a specials market, probably looking at the first round leaders. So Ben, if we start with you, who is the headline tip this week, and why are they going to go so well at Marco Simone?
Well, someone we've talked about already, Nicolai Højgaard. I thought he should be the favourite for this event. He might be by the time they tee off. You know, for me, I think we have to acknowledge that anyone who's playing well on the PGA Tour, when they come back to the DP World Tour, quite often that confidence they've gained, but also, you know, playing in generally slightly deeper fields translates to good form. We saw it with Lucas Herbert, right? He played well in the match play and went on from there and came back to the DP World Tour and won in Japan. I think it's something we see quite often. Not just that, I think Nicolai is perfectly suited to this course. He was brilliant off the tee when he won here, beating Tommy Fleetwood and Adrian Meronk the first time. I thought his title defense was really solid. He played with Rory the first 36 holes, and he, you know, I mean, that's a partnership I'd love to see in September, but he certainly didn't shirk the challenge there. His short game just let him down a bit, and actually we're seeing some real improvements there. He didn't putt so well last week in Mexico, but prior to that, second in Dominican Republic, played well in the Texas Open, played well in the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, where he was very much the standout player alongside Torbjörn Olesen. He'd been putting really well. So I think everything's coming together. I mean, I won't lie, I think he's the most exciting player in Europe by quite a way. In terms of those who've not yet got a PGA Tour card, I think there's every chance that he has one by the end of the year, and I'm really hopeful he makes the Ryder Cup side. In terms of this week, though, as I said, he's got the course form. And if we see how he played at Alhambra earlier in the year, now he had a disappointing Sunday, but he went back to Alhambra where he'd won the previous year and he was banging contention. And I think we will see that with him. He's got this freakish ability off the tee. And there are 3, 4, 5 courses every year where I think he will just turn up, and if his driver's on, you know, he's almost automatically going to play well. And then it becomes a question of whether he can make the putts. And that's a chance I'll take this week. I think he's got every chance, and he's the man to beat.
There you go, 18-1 he currently is at the moment. And as you say, he's got course form and recent form as well. I think my spreadsheet only goes back 16 weeks, and which is about 10 events, and he's not been outside top 30 or so on all those. So really impressive. Matt, and yourself, who's headlining for you?
I've got the Spaniard Adri Arnaus up first. I mentioned earlier about the Earth course in Dubai, and he's played that 4 times, 28th on debut, top 10s. The next 3 times, and he was 1 back after 54 holes in one of those. That's nice, but then you have a little look at his course form and his current form. He's played the course twice. He was second at halfway the first year that the tournament was played there and finished 12th. Last year he opened with a 67 to sit right bang in contention, then a 78 came from nowhere. Now, that's quite frustrating for his point of view, but I kind of quite like that because that kind of hides his course form. And I think it's made the books kind of like forget that actually he's played this course well. And then I just look at his form this year. He contended in Dubai. He got sixth at Ras Al Khaimah. And then he was second in South Africa. And that was only three starts ago. And he shot a 68 in his last two tournaments when he has missed the cut. But again, I think Ben's very keen on Adrie as well this week. And he made a very good point, which was that off the back of that second place, he was well up amongst the favourites. He was very hot in the books. And then suddenly a couple of missed cuts. And he's jumped out to initially a huge price. I mean, I was kind of gobsmacked when I saw it yesterday. And was very, very happy to get on board with him. I always think there's an interesting thing with Adriano. So I call it the Ricardo Gonzalez paradox, which is that this guy has got great ability from the tee, can hit the ball a mile. And everybody kind of assumes, as they did with Ricardo, give him a big wide open golf course and he can go and blast the field away. And in actual fact, the really weird thing is that Ricardo Gonzalez won in Cran at Club de Campo in Madrid and in Kenya. Didn't make any sense from what everybody thought. Adrianos does almost exactly the same thing. He's finished second in all those places. Which is not to say that when he's given a big old track, he can't take advantage. But it's this very odd thing that we expect one thing, we get another. And I think actually this week, he's proved it on courses similar to this. He's proved it on this course. He can do it. And I think when you get all those things and you expect something like 28, 33 to 1, and then you get 50 to 1 and up, you've just got to grab it.
Let's look at your second pick, Ben. Who have you got joining Nicolai?
Yeah, I've taken two from the top. I think there are six players at the top of this market who, if you'd have sort of, you know, told me I had to write the positive case for any one of them, it's quite easy to write. You know, Perez certainly could go well. Wouldn't be a surprise at all. He's played well here, including in September. But the one I really like is Adrian Maronk. And I'm afraid I think me and Matt are singing from the same hymn sheet with him as well. He was runner-up here in 2021. He was not playing particularly well last year in September. He had a bit of a sort of post-win hangover when he won the Irish Open. He sort of went missing for a good 6 months, actually. And then it took until he got to actually the Earth course in Dubai to get back in form. In terms of his preparation, he's been over on the PGA Tour. Last week in Korea was his first DP World Tour start for a couple of months. I thought 21st place was absolutely fine. It looks like he didn't make much. He obviously put in a good move on Friday to get into contention. He was two back entering the final round. You know, he had every chance. He was fourth or fifth in the betting going into Sunday, and things just didn't pan out for him, but he finished on the front foot. I think in terms of, you know, ability, I mean, he's the top ranked player in the field, and he was sixth in the betting of those six. And look, we're talking very fine margins between them. You know, they're almost all the same prices, but I thought basically him and Nicolai were the most likely winners. I know that's pretty straightforward way of describing things, but I think it's a really good course for him. The way he drives the ball, he's probably the second best driver in the field behind Nicolai. And if that's the club that dictates who wins this tournament, then I'm happy to go in with both of those two.
Maronk actually did look good, shaking off a bit of rust, having not played since the Masters last week. He gave himself more eagle putts on the par fives than anyone else, absolutely tore those to shreds. The one thing that did hold him back last week and showed a bit of rust was, funnily enough, the approach play, which is normally his biggest strength. So that actually gives me faith that with those four rounds under his belt and a bit more practice coming into this week, the rest of the game did look sharp. He drove the ball brilliantly. He was playing aggressively and he's a good fit. So I think even though he's not played a lot, I think he's a danger man. Definitely, I would agree, yeah.
Yeah, he's an absolute Ryder Cup hopeful as well. So with Luke Donald's eyes on him, he'll be looking to do well at 20-1. And he is actually third in scoring average this year and third in tee to green strokes gained. But someone who's above him in both is Thorbjørn Olesen. I think, Matt, is he your second pick for the week?
Yes, he kind of dragged Nicolai Højgaard a bit back at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. But I'm not going to worry about that too much. I'm just looking at how well he has played this year on the DP World Tour. He kicked off with 20th in Abu Dhabi, then was 16th in Dubai, then was 4th in Ras Al Khaimah. If you bear in mind that he was 30th at the Earth course in his previous start, his progression was fantastic. And I can remember thinking very closely about him for the Thailand Classic because of that progression, because I thought the course would suit him. He was a little bit short for me that week, but he did continue it and he went on and won in Thailand. He was sixth in India after that. That's fantastic form. And I'm kind of surprised that he's not involved with the sort of top half dozen, perhaps just a little bit behind them, but he's a bit more behind them than I expected. In his pomp, he was quite strong at the Earth course. He got six top 25s in the row. He once got into contention, but he wasn't a regular contender. But he's back in his pomp, I think, at the moment. And also, he's hitting the ball off the tee better than he has done for a long time. So, I'm a bit surprised by Olesen's price this week.
Yeah, he's still being a 33-1 there, Kit. And obviously, does have Ryder Cup experience. We've spoken a bit about Le Golf National 2018. Do you think Luke Donald will be looking towards that as well when thinking of Olesen, Kit?
100%. He is playing incredibly well now. He's playing as well, I think, as he did when he got on that Ryder Cup team. So if he continues doing what he's doing now, you know, you look at someone with previous Ryder Cup experience from Golf National.
So I think that summarises the main picks. And without sounding sort of like Carol Vorderman or Rachel Riley, there's two or three from the top. So we're looking a bit further afield now. And the special market, this week we're looking at first round leader in Italy. Look at the email exchanges, some very juicy prices here. Starting with you, Ben, you've gone for a certain Belgium at 200-1.
Yeah, look, it's Nicolas Kolsarts. I think you gave it away there because he must be the only Belgian in the field. This is a small stake speculative bet, right? It's partly informed by the fact that we saw him in coverage last week and I thought he played beautifully for the first two rounds. I mean, I'm sure you wouldn't mind me saying he didn't look great on the greens, and that's been something that's come and gone throughout the course of his career. But look, we know he's a massive hitter. He's got form on stadium style golf courses, won the Open de France. I think that's a decent enough guide to this week. He's got a great record in the Italian Open and Italy in general. He played really well in a couple of tournaments in Sicily down the years. But in the Italian Open in particular, I think he's got four top five. So I think it's a really nice sort of week for him. He's part of the Ryder Cup. He knows that. He knows part of the backroom team. No doubt he'll be paired with some of those more promising candidates this week. And the last thing I really like is that in terms of first round leads throughout his career, I think he's had 12. The last six of the last seven have come at courses where he'd done it before, in events he'd done it before. He's done the Italian Open twice. They were at different courses. He's done Portugal Masters twice. That's another course that has some sort of part in the sort of puzzle for this week. He's done it the Dunhill Links twice. And I know we can caveat that because, you know, they all play different courses. It's not a pure first round lead, if you like. No doubt he was at King's Barnes for those two rounds. But he does it in the same tournaments and has done for a long time. So obviously, he's had his health problems. He's not going to be the player who made the Ryder Cup side 11 years ago and performed so brilliantly on Sunday in particular. But I do think he's got a little bit left to offer. And over one round, I think, you know, whereas I wouldn't really be interested in playing the top 20, he's 500-1 outright. I can't really see that. For one round, I can see it. I just hope it's Thursday. But we'll see how that goes. But yeah, small stakes, speculative, and hope we see a former Ryder Cup player on the leaderboard before the prospective ones take over.
Okay, great. And yeah, looking at last year, I think Matt Fitzpatrick was open with a 65 to lead. The year before was 64s from Minwoo Lee and Kalle Samoja. So Matt, what about yourself? Are you going above the 200 mark or settling a bit more in middle ground?
Andy Sullivan, I was tempted with to begin with. My only problem is he's been first and second after 18 holes in the last 2 weeks. That could be a positive. I'm also like, can he really do it three times in a row?
He's 17 under par for his last three opening rounds on the DP World Tour, Sally.
Yeah. I did have a little look, and I think he has once put together three very good first rounds in a row. But in the end, I've gone with Alex Bjork, who is also in decent nick in the first round. He's been ninth, third, and fourth, but he hasn't actually. I'm going to hope that he hasn't peaked yet. And he finished with a 66 last week. So I think he's got good vibes again with that. He's got a lot of low scores in him recently, and I think he's got one in him here. So 66 is Alex Bjork for me.
Great, lovely. And Kit, what about yourself? Just you mentioned fast starters there. Is someone you've got your eye on at all in the field this week?
One name that hasn't been mentioned that I just want to put out there really just for the tournament in general is Jorge Campillo. I mean, I think he is quietly playing some absolutely sensational golf. Fourth, first, ninth and third in his last four starts. Finished really strongly. Career on Sunday came through to get that top five finish. He said it was one of the top five ball striking rounds of his life. And he said he missed 4 or 5 8 to 15 footers. It could have been much lower. I think he was a 65 to force his way up the leaderboard I just think he's playing brilliant golf. He's flying under the radar in every sense, in terms of the markets, I think, to win tournaments, in terms of the Ryder Cup chat. He's quite high up on those qualification lists. I think that finish at the weekend moved him up to seventh in the race to Dubai. This is a guy that still no one's talking about, but he's playing some brilliant, brilliant golf. So I just wanted to chuck Jorge Campillo in there, give him a bit of credit and a bit of love.
Well, there you go. Plenty of great names mentioned throughout. And we will recap them at the end. But time now to move on to the PGA Tour elevated event of the Wells Fargo Championship. So yeah, all eyes are back on Quail Hollow after a year away from the course due to the hosting of the 2022 President's Cup. And yes, it is an elevated event, which means the majority of top players are in the field. But two names have stood out, because for the last sort of half decade, they've dominated, being Max Homer and Rory McIlroy. So firstly, let's find out why and what about this course is so suiting to Max Homer and Rory. And I'll come to you first, Matt.
Whenever Rory talks about Quail Hollow, he just goes a little bit gooey-eyed. Pretty much everything he said. I think he once said, "I just love tree-lined golf courses." Everybody sort of coughed and didn't mention Augusta National when that happened. He also just said he likes the flow of the golf course. I think he's once said that he's birdied every hole and he just goes to the tee thinking there's no reason why I can't do that again. And one year he even said, "Look, I can turn up here not playing very well, and I can just get a good round out of myself." The other weird thing about Rory McIlroy is he does keep testing that theory out. His first win on the PGA Tour was at Quail Hollow, and that was in 2010 when he was a rookie on the PGA Tour. There were kind of like mutterings from the Americans: "Is this guy as good as everybody says he is?" He only got into the weekend by the skin of his teeth. Then he absolutely thrashed the field, won by four shots. When he last won at Quail Hollow in 2021, his form was dire. I think he'd shot 76 to finish at Bay Hill and went away feeling terrible. He missed the cut, Sawgrass and Augusta National, didn't even look like making the cut, and then he won here at Quail Hollow. So what he says does come true. He can play here when he's playing terribly, and unfortunately he kind of needs to. And again, he's in that situation again because he didn't really enjoy Augusta National and he didn't turn up at Harbour Town afterwards. So it'll be interesting this week. He's going to get a lot of questions about why he didn't turn up at Harbour Town, but he's also going to get those good vibes when he gets onto the golf course.
Yeah, the golf course obviously is an amazing one, ending with the Green Mile 16, 17 and 18, which are very tough stretch to finish. It hosted 2017 PGA Championship, which I'm sure, Ben, you may touch on later with one of your picks, but also hosted the 2022 President's Cup. And we saw Jordan Spieth go 5-0 there, and it's the first time he's back this week since 2013. But the other name, as mentioned, is Max Homer, who went 4-0 that week. And what is it for him? I mean, he's obviously very high up in the market. Again, about Quail, that suits him so much, and is it someone you're looking at this week? Because it seems the same people perform pretty well here.
I think an interesting thing with... I'll let Ben take that. Sorry, I didn't know who that was with. But I will just quickly say, Max Homer plays well on major championship golf courses. He's won at Riviera, he's won Quail Hollow, he's won Torrey Pines. There's another weird sort of paradox with Max Homer, that he plays them well when they're not hosting major championships, because he's terrible on them when there are a major. And I'll just toss in something about Rory. A great quote from Jason Day, where he said that he can hit the ball high as well as long, and it means he can take it over the corner of the dog legs here, which gives him sort of three, four better clubs going into the greens. Now I shall let Ben finish after I very rudely interrupted him.
No, look, there's not much to add, to be honest. I'm very happy for you to have answered it. Max Homer is, he played really well in the President's Cup here, didn't he? I think at the moment, his game is just sort of, he peaked earlier in the season and he's struggling to find it at the moment. So he wouldn't be one for me. But you have to respect his record, not just at the course, but in the event, because obviously he won it at a different course last year. So very popular, no doubt, but he wasn't on my shortlist this week. In terms of the course, I don't think the formula is all that far removed from what we're looking at over in Italy, to be honest with you. It is a very different looking course, but certainly length is a massive asset here. And I think we see that pretty much every time they come here. JB Holmes is another past champion. Peter Uihlein was a contender here once, loads and loads of big hitters. But again, and I'll go back to Italy, as we mentioned with Aaron Rye, If Rory had made a mess of the last hole in 2021, which he almost did, and credit to his caddy Harry Diamond convincing him to take a drop there, Abraham Anser was standing in waiting the clubhouse lead. Joel Damon chased home Max Homer. James Harm beat Roberto Castro in a playoff here. That isn't even the craziest renewal of the Wells Fargo, because you'll remember that David Lynn and Derek Ernst had a playoff for this tournament once. So it's done some weird and wonderful things over the years, this event. But now we've got this designated status. We have all bar two of the best players in the world. I think increasingly these tournaments are going to be going to the market leaders. The only exception so far was Kurt Kitayama. Do I think we've got another one of those coming this week? Probably not.
I say, are you reading my notes? Because I've got here Ernst and Hahn, both 500-1 winners, and Max Homer 300-1 the first time he did it. So we've looked there at course form. Kit, before we get into the main tips from the guys, what about recent form? Is there a name that's sort of standing out to you that you're interested to see if they can sort of translate it at Quail?
Yeah, Jason Day. He's already been mentioned. I love the form he's found this year in general. I think mentioning the high ball flight is huge here, because it's kind of something obviously you don't pick up in stats, although I think on the PGA Tour you can have the average apex of drives on stats. So you genuinely can have a look at the guys that have got the higher ball flights. And if you've got a bit of length, but that comes with a higher ball flight, I think that suits Quail Hollow really, really well also. I'm just excited by Jason Day. I like watching him play good golf, and I'd really enjoyed when he was world number one a few years ago. I think he's won here before. He's had good results here before. So he's not in the top 10, 15, 20 again yet, but he's playing the kind of golf that will get him there. So I think you can include him in that group of the best players in the world who can contend. He has a major under his belt. He's a former world number one. This was the fifth toughest course on the PGA Tour last time it hosted the Wells Fargo in 2021. It got a renovation for when it hosted the major in 2017, the PGA. Everything about this is a major test, including now this year, the field. And I think we will see that cream rise. Rory McIlroy will be there or thereabouts, no doubt about that whatsoever. But I think Jason Day will be right up there also. And you can look for players that turn up on tough courses with the bright lights on them and when the fields are truly, truly quality.
I came very close to having Jason Day, and I'll just throw something out there that he's a little bit bigger than he was for the Masters. And I would argue that this field's not as strong as the Masters, and he's actually a course winner here rather than having gone close. My negative was he closed with an 80 at Augusta and hasn't been seen since. And I'm always a bit wary with Jason Day that he might have tripped over a step or something and broken his head rather than just his toe. So ultimately, I went with Victor Hovland, who was third on his debut here in 2021. And I like the way he talked about the golf course. He liked the setup from the tee. He quite liked the fact that it's blustery. And although you wouldn't necessarily think that a Norwegian golfer is a very fine player in blustery wind, turns out he is, because he went to college in Oklahoma. He really liked it. He liked the fact it blew everywhere. He stayed there, and he tends to play blustery golf courses very well. And also his form's just bubbling very nicely. He was second with 18 holes to play at Bay Hill, third at Sawgrass, third with 18 holes to go at Augusta, and fifth at halfway at Harbortown. I think there's a big win in Victor Hovland coming soon. And I think this week could easily be it.
Yep, he's 20-1 at the moment. I know there's been a lot of drum banging going on. Ben also likes Victor. I saw on Twitter, I think he led strokes gained at this event last year, more than sort of Rory. But you've gone for an American on home soil at Quail Hollow as your main pick, Ben.
Yeah, I can't bring myself to say his name. But so just quickly on Hovland, I really liked his quote, and Matt alluded to it when he played here. He called it driving range golf. And a lot of people, you know, the sort of architecture buffs were sort of a wry smile, like, yeah, rubbish, isn't it? But he was saying it in a good way. And he was saying you just have to hit the center of the club face. And I think there's a good argument that if that's the challenge, then he's about the best player on the PGA Tour. I mean, you know, behind John Rahm, I suppose, at the moment. But he, you know, in terms of point, shoot, execute with the long game, he's got few peers. So hopefully he can go and conquer the driving range again this week. But I'll throw in Justin Thomas as well. I have told colleagues in this building that the Steve Redgrave quote, if, you know, next April, if I mention Justin Thomas, then somebody shoot me, because I've backed him for the Masters, I think, 7 years in a row. And so far, this idea that he's a Masters champion in waiting has proved deeply flawed. But we know he can win here. He won his first major here in 2017. That was a, I have to say, I've generally been quite good at Justin Thomas. I was on him at 50-1 that week. I was on him when he won the WGC at Firestone. I was on him at the Players when he was 20-1. I think he wins big events at big prices when there are some doubts about him. And I think we saw it last year. Jordan Spieth missed the cut at Augusta for the very first time in his career. He went and won the following week. And I can see something similar happening with Thomas. Obviously, he has played since he played the Heritage, but I don't really think that's a good course for him at all. He'll finish reasonably high up the leaderboard there because he's Justin Thomas, right? And he was 25th. But I don't think it's really his track, whereas this certainly is. He's played well here since winning the PGA Championship, generally a bit quiet on the greens. If there is a concern at the moment, some people will tell you it's his iron play that's dipped a level, but that doesn't worry me. That'll be back. You know, sort of if you have a bad driving week from Rory McIlroy, you know it's not a malaise. It's not going to last any significant amount of time. Justin Thomas's putter has been the problem, but in the Heritage final round, he started to see the ball go in. I know he's been off a couple of weeks since then, but he's been working hard. He said he cut short a planned holiday. I think he'll have the bit between his teeth. He's got a point to prove, and he gets to go back to a golf course he absolutely loves. So, I don't think I've put him up at Quail Hollow since 2017, so we're safe there. And I think there's a good chance. It'd be PGA Tour win number 16, by the way. So when it comes, you know, he's the same price as Cam Young, who's got a brilliant future, but still looking for PGA Tour win number one. I do tend to think Justin Thomas is a bit underrated, which is why I'm happy to go in again.
Yeah, nice. And he's, yeah, as you say, 22-1 with a lot of the Cam Young, Jordan Spieth, Colin Morikawa, I think his first time here, Matt Fitzpatrick, Homer, they're all around that mark in mid-20s, which is a bit of value. And if we go to your second picks, as mentioned, could be a bit of a long shot course with some of those big prices. Matt, who have you got coming for us next at Quail Hollow?
I'm first going to say, am I right in thinking that when Steve Redgrave said what he did actually come back?
Yes, he did. I'll be tipping Justin Thomas, just not next year. Give me a year off. I need a year off.
He did, yes. Right, so my long shot is a guy who's actually done very well at Quail Hollow, Joel Damon. He was 16th on debut, second, Ben mentioned a short while ago in 2020, 18th in 2021. So he's 3 for 3 for hitting the top 20. Then you have to look at his form, and that explains why he's available at three figures this week. He's had 8 individual starts in 2023 and a best of tied 41st, which is not very good. But he did, on his last individual start, open Harbour Town with a 66. So that gives me a little bit of hope. He then went and sort of boosted the confidence with tied 11th alongside Denny McCarthy in the Zurich Classic. And you have a little look at him. He's a guy who can pull a rabbit out of a hat. So I'm not massively bothered. And also, he got 5 top 20s and 6 starts at the beginning of the season last year. 3 of those were top 10s. He likes certain golf courses and he struggles on others. And I think something about this place he quite enjoys. So he won't be quite a bigger price as some of those whopping outsiders. But I think he's got a bit of a shot and definitely a good shot at a top 20 as well.
Yeah, so he's 150-1 at the moment. And as you say with Joel Damon, when he's in contention, he always has the whole crowd with him, thanks to his personality and Caddy Gino. So that's something to bear in mind heading into the weekend if he's in a good position. And Ben, also a three-figure pick from you for your second pick in the Wells Fargo Championship.
Yeah, he's just about. It's Davis Riley, who I've put him up quite a lot over the last 12 months, and it was frustrating to miss. I tipped him in Texas and he withdrew, having, I think he shot about 80 and then called it a day. But he came out in the Zurich Classic and won alongside Nick Hardy. I think if you drill down into it, thanks to Data Golf, we can see that he was very much the linchpin in that partnership. And I kind of think it's just been ignored by bookmakers as if it hadn't happened. And although I don't fault them for that necessarily, I can understand fully why you would take it with a pinch of salt. Cast my mind back to last year. I think it was a really important win for Xander Schauffele. And it might just be the same for Davis Riley in a slightly different way. He spent 12 months as, you know, building his profile and reputation and being one of the best rookies last year. Didn't manage to win, but was in contention in a load of good events. Could have won at Colonial, contended for the USPGA. Lost a playoff for the Valspar, of course. So he's gone very close. And I think it's not very difficult here if you pull up a map of the USA and you plot where Davis Riley has played well, it will be relatively clustered in the south and southeast. That's his neck of the woods. He's from Mississippi, went to college in Alabama. We're in North Carolina this week. He played well at the Wyndham. He sort of went quiet when the PGA Tour went north to Ohio and the states up there in summer last year, and then came back down to North Carolina and played well again. And I think that's a trend we see. And if you're looking at his form this year, it's kind of following a similar pattern. And he had eighth at Bay Hill, which is a really similar course to this one. Played well at the Honda, played okay at the Valspar again. If he's going to win his first individual title anywhere, it will be, I'm sure, in one of these events in the Southern States. It's his first time at Quail Hollow. One of the key things you need to do here is hit good mid to long irons. It's something Joel Damon does really well. It's something Davis Riley does really well. So, yeah, we'll see. He's got a 78 in him. There's no doubt about that. But on the back of a win, which he said would do wonders for him, a week off last week, I'm really happy to chance him. I think he's a future top 10 player in the world, and hopefully he can continue that move this week.
Glowing review there, top 10 player in the world. So that is sort of sums up the Wells Fargo Championship with some big names and juicy prices, which might be the next podcast name we go for. If they are contending come Sunday afternoon, they'll have to take on the Green Mile, the very challenging finishing stretch of 16, 17 and 18, which has provided lots of drama through the years. Rory McIlroy in 2021, but of course also David Toms many years back nearly threw away a six-shot lead. So just how hard is the Green Mile, especially when you're in contention for winning?
Yeah, massively. I mean, Matt alluded to Rory's little wobble down 18 a few years back as well, when he was up the left-hand side on that bank in the thick rough. Actually, a slightly better or not as bad tee shot would have found the little stream, but he got lucky up there, and there was a long conversation about what to do with Harry Diamond, and ultimately they made the right decision and won. But there is jeopardy, and there's pressure. You know, winning golf tournaments isn't easy. Even, you know, Justin Thomas, who's racked them up, or anyone else, under pressure, it becomes difficult, especially when the names on the leaderboard chasing you are guys that are also established winners and the best players in the world. And this Green Mile forces you to take on difficult shots under extreme pressure and with massive consequence if you get it wrong. You know, it's hard to scramble from out of position on these holes, especially if you get your ball wet, because that's automatically shots gone. It tests them. And I think that's why we've seen some interesting winners here over the years. And I think we'll see it again, but I just can't see anything but someone out of the top 10 or 15 in the betting, those real top players winning it. Because of all of these reasons, and the Green Mile for me just adds to it, it's a really tough stretch of the course that comes at the most important time of it at the end, when you've got your hand, one hand on a trophy, or you're fighting to get your hand on a trophy, and experience and guys that know how to get the job done will more often than not come out on top in those circumstances. So you never, it's one of those courses where it's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? But no lead is ever enough kind of thing. And you can say that to an extent here, but you would always trust the better players who have done it. And especially over this course at the Green Mile, we see players, it's probably one of the, not easier, but it's a more predictable course than a lot of others in terms of you often do see the same players coming back and doing well. And I think knowing that you've traversed those three holes well previously will give you the confidence to do it. And ultimately, you've got to have, you know, serious backbone and serious game to do it four times, and most importantly on a Sunday afternoon when there's a trophy on the line. So we're going to get drama there, but I think it will separate the men from the boys.
Yeah, absolutely, couldn't agree more. And there you have it, a pretty comprehensive preview of two incredible events we have this week on both sides of the pond, with stellar fields, especially some big names at the top of the market with plenty to prove. So I think it just leaves us to do a bit of a recap on the tips mentioned so far. Huge thanks there to all of our guests. And it's time now to recap their picks, starting in Italy with Ben Coley going for Nicolai Højgaard at 18-1 and Adrian Meronk joining him at 20-1. Matt Cooper has gone for Dane Torbjørn Olesen at 33-1 and headlining Adri Arnaus at 50-1. They've both also thrown in a first round leader pick. It's Nicholas Kolsarts at 200-1 for Ben Coley and Alexander Bjork at 66-1. For Matt Cooper. And as we go over the pond to the Wells Fargo Championship, Ben Coley has opened with Justin Thomas at 22-1 and Davis Riley. the Southern American expert at 100-1. And then Matt Cooper going for Victor Hovland at 20-1 and the ever likable Joel Damon at 150-1. Some very big names there and great prices. I want to thank the guests again. They've all been brilliant. And if they do persuade you into finding a winner, you can find them and thank them on Twitter at Ben Coley Golf, at Matt Cooper Golf, and to break the trend and the very original at Kit on the Course. Good luck this week with your bets. Enjoy all of the golf, but please do remember to always gamble responsibly. And when the fun stops, stop.